After all the presents are exchanged in December, there's always one more in the mail waiting for you every single January. A nice, thick envelope holding, yes, your credit card bill. I'm Jabalani LaFault. On today's Central Standard, let's get some advice for managing your holiday debts and hear some strategies that work from a team of financial planners. Plus, dive into some planning strategies for 2012, from setting aside emergency funds to refinancing your mortgage to reassessing your asset allocations. Plus, a look at some things taxpayers can do to reduce their 2011 tax bills before the filing deadlines. Our financial planning squad has arrived and are here to save the day on today's Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. For most of us, the post-holiday to-do list typically goes like this. New Year's resolution. Take stock of the new year. Take down the decorations. Feel guilty about breaking the resolution. And then finally, open the mail that you know consists of bills. It's back to business. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFault. To begin the year with financial planning strategies, it seems the first a daunting task. But now, when you have advisors, as we do in the studio, we have Alex Petrovic, certified financial planner, Dan Matthews of Stepan Rothwell, and David Jackson, returning Financial Planners Association of Kansas City. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Let's meet everybody for our listeners, beginning with Alex and then Dan, and then a reintroduction back for the first time with David Jackson. Alex, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I've been in the business about 27 years. I've been a CFP, or Certified Financial Planner, since 1988, and I presently have an office on 47th Street on the Country Club Plaza.
Dan, how about you?
Well, it's great to be back on the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I graduated from this fine institution in 1996, and since then I've been working in the financial services industry. For the last 10 years, I've been a financial planner with Step and Rothwell in Overland Park.
And David Jackson?
Yes, I've been in the industry about 17 years now, and I'm a board member with the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City.
So, David, let's start back with you. What's the most common aspect of financial planning that people should be looking at right now in mid-January as the year begins, when it comes to the rest of the year, looking forward?
Well, you know, as your statements are rolling in and you know you're going to have to deal with taxes, this is a good time to just start figuring out where you are financially. You know, it's like with any journey that you're going to take, you have to know where you are before you can figure out where you're going. So it's a good time to take inventory, figure out where you are, and, you know, start putting your plans in place for the rest of the year.
And how do you manage holiday debt after the holidays?
And that's one of the things we wanted to talk to your listeners about, because we know a lot of people get themselves in trouble after during the holidays, spending a little bit too much. And, you know, when it's credit card debt that you have to deal with, you also have to deal with those high interest rates. And one of the things that we try to advise people to do is take a look at what the debts are and what are the interest rates on those debts. And in a lot of cases, it makes the most sense to pay off the higher interest rate debts first, the ones that are costing you the most.
So, Dan, as parents are looking at these bills, how can parents use their holiday spending experiences and their hair-wrenching, gut-wrenching, eye-rolling debts and interest rates to teach their children good money habits?
Well, the holidays spending do make for a good opportunity to teach children about personal finance. The first thing is obviously don't compromise the magic of the holidays. Children do need to understand that when you do make purchases, and a lot of holiday purchases are made with credit cards, that when you make those purchases, that they are not free. And so you need to include them in the process of opening the credit card bill when you actually receive it in January and paying it, so that they understand that when you make the initial purchase, that there is actually a subsequent event to that, that you have to pay that bill. And so that's important. And then also you can take this time to actually start a plan for the 2012 holiday season, and maybe by setting up a piggy bank, an extra piggy bank for your son or daughter, and have them put a little bit of money in each month and save that throughout the year. And then they can use that in December to buy gifts for their siblings or friends. And it's a really great experience to get them involved in that. And then they can actually go out to the stores and make a purchase themselves, which is really great to do.
Alex Petrovic, your thoughts on life in debt for 2012?
Well, for kicks, I Googled debt management plan services or just debt management, and there was like 80 million.
Literally 80 million.
80 million. But I also Googled American Idol, and there were 390 million.
Well, there you go. That shows you where the priorities are.
Exactly. So, well, I think that the comments that were made here already were appropriate. There is one opinion that paying down your smallest credit card balances gives you a sense of accomplishment as opposed to maybe the larger ones that have higher interest rates.
Is that a good idea? To pay down the small one to give you a sense of accomplishment?
I think, depending on the person and what struggles they have in the past, but if they're one that has that they need some momentum, just paying down a small balance gives them, and closing that account would give them a feeling of accomplishment.
David Jackson, a lot of spending and a lot of debt by extension is based on consumer sentiment, the never-ending question. What are some ways people can now get real in 2012? Does changing your personal finance methods require changing your ways first?
We know a lot of what we do is based on emotion and not sound logic. And so I think the first of the year is a good time to be logical with yourself and actually write out a spending plan. Actually put it on paper where you see X number of dollars are coming in each month. How am I going to allocate those dollars? You know, what are my wants? What are my needs? And then, you know, stick to a plan. So, you know, we're all financial planners, and we really do believe in the power of planning to get yourself ahead.
Alex, if you're not independently wealthy or don't believe in credit, chances are you have some debt. How do you develop strategies to pay down that debt and also decide maybe what not to pay right about now?
Yeah, that's a good question. We just were counseling a couple when they just got married, and they actually didn't have for a marriage when you get prenuptial.
Oh, prenup.
They didn't have a prenuptial.
Yes,
oh, okay.
And he came in with a lot of debt. She had no debt, and that was the first mistake we think they made. But as importantly now, they have set up a schedule of paying down debt, and they can see a timeline of what will get paid when. And for them, it was, I think, just having that timeline and earmarking which ones that they could that made the most sense to address.
Dan, how do you make the distinction in a financial plan bills, paying bills versus paying debt? You see what I'm saying? Paying bills versus paying debt. Your general rolling administrative expenses versus mm-hmm. the debt that is sitting on you.
Well, debt is a contractual obligation to a lender, so you are bound to pay that debt back. And more so, if you do not pay the debt back, then that could result in a blemish on your credit report, which you do not want, especially if you're thinking about refinancing your home or possibly buying a home or buying a car in the near future. You do not want something like that on your credit report. So in terms of prioritizing, obviously you want to keep the lights on in your house and the heat on in your house. So you obviously want to pay those first. But it's also still important to understand that after that, what you owe to the credit card company needs to get paid as well.
David Jackson, how do you keep bills from becoming debt?
Well, you know, you have to pay your bills on time, you know, like Dan said, to keep the lights on, keep a roof over your head. But, you know, the best way to control debt is not to make it. You know, certain debts are good debts. There's some that are bad debts. And, you know, if you can be smart about it, you manage to eliminate those unnecessary debts.
What's an example of a good debt versus a bad debt?
Well, a good debt would be like Dan's example. He went here to UMKC for his education. You know, if he had to borrow money to get his college degree, that's good debt because ultimately that's going to pay for itself, and I'm sure it has for him. A bad debt would be, you know, that big screen TV that you really wanted, you know, and, you know, you go ahead and, you know, you put it on the card, but then you end up paying twice as much for it because of the interest that hit you.
Let's play around with this a little bit. Mm-hmm. Alex, what's an example of a good debt versus a bad debt?
A good debt could also be a home because interest is deductible, second mortgage interest deductible, a rental property that produces income that still has debt would be but obviously the bad debts are the ones that depreciate, which is a car, a boat, big screen, things like that.
Yet why is there more debt in depreciable assets, Dan?
Well, you know, one of the golden rules of personal finance is not to spend more than you make. So people get themselves in trouble because they go out and do that. They spend more than they make, and then they eventually have to pay those pay off the spending in the future, which they couldn't afford before.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Javelani LaFall. We have a brain trust of money mavens here to help you make sense of the bill blues and shoring up planning for that now three-week-old year of 2012. Our guests are Alex Petrovic. He's a certified financial planner with Petrovic Financial Services. Dan Matthews, also a certified financial planner with Step and Rothwell. And David Jackson of the Financial Planners Association. Kansas City, what is your top financial priority in 2012? And how do you plan to get there? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Definitely call in, write in to join the conversation. Now, David, you want to check your credit report at this time of year, right?
I think it would be a good time to do it. You know, you should do it at least once a year, and the first of the year is probably a good time to do it. You want to be looking for any mistakes that are in there, because frequently there are mistakes, things that you actually did not do that show up on your credit report. You also want to know what your credit score is, because if you do decide to, you're going to go out and try to refinance the house or something like that, if you have some dings on your credit and your credit score is low, you're not going to get the best possible interest rates.
Dan, what are some ways you can get a free credit report?
Well, the easiest way is to go to annualcreditreport.com, and from there you can get up to three credit reports, one from each of the three reporting agencies, TransUnion,
Equifax,
and
Experian.
Experian, yes, one, thank yeah. you. So that's the best way to get your credit reports. And you want to get one now, and I suggest that you kind of that you get one throughout the year, so that you not all three at once, but that you get them throughout the year, so that if anything does happen throughout the year, that you're notified of those through those credit reports.
Now, Alex, is it a myth or a practical method to be able to take the best credit score and just go with that? Or is knowing all three the best? Like if your Experian is above 7, but your TransUnion or Equifax is below 650 for some reason, do you push the Experian?
I'm not an expert.
How does that
on
work?
That. I think they average them.
They average them, all three.
Right.
The aggregate number.
I don't think you can leverage against one or the other.
Is that the
I believe so, too, but then, you know, you don't know. That's the thing. You don't know. So it's in your best interest to know all three. And then if there are some problems with one, try to work on it.
Yeah, it's my understanding that if you, for instance, are applying for a home mortgage or refinancing your home, that they take the scores from all three and then average them.
We have Abigail in KC ready to join this money talk. Welcome to Central Standard, Abigail.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Financial goals for 2012. Hit us.
Our financial goal for 2012 is to build a fully funded emergency fund, about 3 to 6 months of living expenses. And that is after completing our initial goals, like paying off debt, which we did completely, and we're debt-free now. And I don't know if you guys have heard of Dave Ramsey, but that's the plan that we were following, and we're on what he calls baby step number 3 now, which is building up the emergency fund. So
we've never heard of Dave Ramsey. Never heard of Dave Ramsey at all, Abigail.
David, I just turned on the radio, so I don't know what I missed.
No doubt. Thank you for calling in, Abigail. David Jackson, an emergency fund. You like this idea.
Yeah, I commend her for following those steps and building up the emergency fund. One of the problems I've run into with many of my clients is that we set up a good investment plan for them, but if they don't have that emergency fund, then something happens. They have to interrupt their investment strategies to take money out. So, you know, that's one of the foundations of a good financial plan is building up that emergency fund.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Join the conversation. What are your financial goals for 2012? You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Alex, we'll start with you, and then we'll go around this personal finance sound table, if you will. What are some strategies for people who are so underwater that they can barely meet essentials, much less pay off debt? Where do you start if you need to start from scratch or start over?
Yeah, the there's an association that's a non-for-profit. I can't remember the name right now, that you can go to, and they will help you.
Consumer credit, you think, in the pricing?
Right. And to consolidate that debt and to work with some of the debtors to lower the rates and to get a debt repayment plan that you can survive with, as opposed to going to one of these commercial credit consolidators, which oftentimes you'll end up paying more than what you would certainly on a not-for-profit.
Dan, where do you start?
Well, first of all, you have to find out where you're at and find out how much you actually owe. And then I think from there you need to contact all of the creditors and start making a plan with them first. Some creditors are willing to work with you, and so you should contact them first to find out if they will do that. And then after that, it's just a matter of just taking these baby steps to get yourself out of the hole that you put yourself into, and then learning from that experience so to avoid that in the future.
What are those baby steps, David Jackson, from your estimation?
Well, you know, understanding where you are, you have to start with that. I mean, it's just plain and simple. You have to do the numbers and figure out where you are. You know, sometimes it makes sense to do debt consolidation, but each situation is going to be a little bit different. But, you know, you actually do have to do the homework of how much money is coming in, how much do I owe, and what can I afford to pay? I've had these conversations with clients where I've had to tell them, you know, maybe you need to take in a boarder or move in with somebody. Maybe you need to get rid of the car and start taking the bus. Sometimes there's some really tough decisions that people have to make when they're upside down. And, you know, we don't want to do it, but, you know, sometimes that's all that you can do.
As an advisor, getting beyond the numbers, getting beyond the intangibles, how do you advise on those tough decisions?
Well, sometimes it is just having that heart-to-heart conversation with people, you know, say, hey, I understand times are tough and I understand your situation. You know, I've had people come to me making $30,000, $40,000 a year with a couple of kids, and they asked me to wave my magic wand to figure out how to make things really work for them. And it gets tough. Sometimes they do have to make really, really difficult decisions.
Alex, do you ever just have to close the books, put the pen down, scratch your head and say, look, here's what you can do, and here's what you can't do?
Certainly, yeah. Occasionally you have to say that, you know, we personally can't help you on this issue. You have to make the hard decisions. And it's possible that they can look at where they're spending their money. Maybe they can defer if they are already in retirement plans, which is probably not the case. But if they were, they could defer making contributions to something like that in order to pay down debt. But it's a hard conversation, and it's one that you have to just be honest with people.
Marion Liberty writes in to share, we are debt-free, yes, and own rental property. Our renters constantly bounce their rent checks, and they're late with payments, 1 or 2 months behind, et cetera. And she feels a strong material need to help them get their financial houses in order. How can you help people who don't want to help themselves? We were just talking about help and hard choices, but yet they impact our finances, as in Mary's finances. How do you help your debtors, so to speak, if you own a rental property? Because it in turn helps your finances, as Marion Liberty points out.
Well, first off, I think, you know, maybe it's a little, the horse is out of the barn already, but you're going to have
right.
to screen better in terms of who you rent to. There's a higher demand for rentals presently than there was a few years back with all the home foreclosures, but right. I think it's doing your homework up front and then seeing if you can work with them again on a payment schedule. But
And I'm going to put a plug in for the Money Smart Month, which is coming up in April. And it's an annual event where they are offering, it's set up by the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City and the FDIC, and you have several financial institutions that are involved in this Money Smart Month, providing free financial education for the public. And, you know, you can go to their website and get more information. Maybe she would want to encourage her renters to go to some of those classes and learn about budgeting and developing spending plans and just general personal finance.
Perhaps Mike in South Kansas City calls in to ask, would you recommend getting a payday loan in an emergency situation if you don't have emergency funds? Wow.
Well, there was
payday loan. Is it that bad?
Yes, that's an easy access credit, and those loans can have disastrous results. Interestingly enough, there was an article in the Kansas City Star this morning about payday loans and some of the tactics that are going on there. You know, normally an interest rate on a loan, especially right now, would for a home loan would be maybe 4 or 5%, and then for credit cards, those interest rates go up to, say, 10 to 20%. But for payday loans, the interest rates on those can be triple figure, you know, triple digit. So obviously the loan amount that you take out with that amount of interest, you could pay back twice as much, if not three times as much, of what you originally borrowed.
Alex, how do you convince people to not act out of desperation?
I mean, in terms of buying what
in
they
terms
shouldn't
of
be buying
what they shouldn't be buying, in terms of moving too quick to pay off too much too soon and neglecting basic needs.
Yeah.
How do you keep people from panicking when they come to you?
Well, that is a really good question, and I don't know if there's a good answer that's success. It's much like in the investment side of our business. How do you keep people from panicking when the market's going down?
Sure.
You know, it's trying to hold their hand, talking to them, giving examples of past experiences. But ultimately, people will do what they're going to do, and you can try. But once they're that far, I still suggest going back to professional, non-for-profit credit counseling, because they don't have an axe to grind, and they can evaluate your situation. And I think that people might feel some comfort.
Dan, what's your standard response when someone wants to hit the panic button on their financial issues?
Well, I think you just try to interject some logic and reason into the conversation. And let them know that their emotions may be getting the best of them. And just having a frank conversation with them to say, you know, if you do this, here are the ramifications making such a move. And when they kind of hear it out loud and they hear it themselves, they think twice about it and then maybe slow down a little bit and think, you know, maybe I'm not making the right move here. Maybe I am panicking, and so I need to just step back from the situation.
Yeah, to expound on that, I think so many people out there, they make their decisions based on pure emotion. And one of the advantages they have of working with a financial planner is, you know, somebody who's outside of their fishbowl who can give them just frank and honest advice and, you know, try to take some emotion out of it and help them make practical decisions as opposed to emotional decisions.
We're on with Alex Petrovic, Dave Matthews, not the Dave Matthews Band, Dan Matthews, excuse me, certified financial planner, and David Jackson, who's also a certified financial planner. Kansas City, what advice do you need to get a head start on your finances for 2012? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Let's get a jump start on retirement. Dan, how can listeners use their employees' retirement plans to reduce their tax bills while taking a step to secure more retirement income?
Well, for our generation, at least I'm pushing 40, but at least for our generation, you know, we're not going to have the pension plans that a lot of our grandparents had to secure retirement income.
No kidding.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it's things have changed. The ball game has changed, and so we need to change with it. And one of the best ways that you can help secure your retirement income is through these employer-sponsored retirement plans, most commonly, you know, is the 401k plan. And so by making contributions to that plan, you can make them on a pre-tax basis. You can now, a lot of the plans offer the what's called the Roth 401k contribution option, where you can make contributions that are not pre-tax, but those earnings on those dollars are never taxed again. Nor the contributions. So depends on your particular situation about which one you should make. And then on top of that, the employers are mandated by the rules of the plans to make some contributions in most cases. So you not only make your contributions, but you get some employer contributions into your account. And that's how you start building what we refer to as the nest egg. And, you know, the nest egg, in addition to Social Security, which I, you know, who knows if it's going to be around in 2030 or whenever they're projecting that the trust fund will no longer be able to satisfy its liabilities. So those are the nest egg plus your personal savings really are going to create the retirement income that you need to you know, live a happy retirement.
Well, I think what we discovered here in this first half of the hour is that money talks and other things walk. That's the mantra of this discussion with our resident money experts, Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial Services, Dan Matthews, Step and Rothwell Incorporated, and David Jackson of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, more money talk and ideas on long-term strategies, tax preparation, and we're taking your questions when we return. Kansas City, What advice do you need to get a head start on your finances for 2012? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Payroll tax cuts, tax withholdings, FICO scores, budgets, they're not the typical conversation at a New Year's Eve party. But perhaps some 20 days later, our guests say it's time to start talking about it, and the time is now. Alex Petrovic, a certified financial planner at Petrovic Financial Services, Dan Matthews of Step and Rothwell, and one of our regulars, David Jackson of the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City, are here to help you sort things out. Kansas City. What advice do you need to get a head start on your finances for 2012? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org to keep the ideas flowing and the conversation going. Jim in Platte City calls in to ask, does his home equity line of credit count as an emergency fund?
It kind of does.
Kind of. But this is also the type of thinking that got many homeowners leveraged to the hilt.
Yeah, I would much prefer seeing him have an actual emergency fund and then have
cash.
Not
of the line
right.
of credit.
And then that can kind of be a backup to the cash. But, yeah, you know, you still need the cash.
Your thoughts on Jim, Dan?
Yeah, I would agree. Home equity line of credits are, although they're, you can get access to cash easily through those, you have to be careful. Because you do have to pay those back either while you're maintaining line of credit or when you sell the home. But cash or a short-term cash reserve would be best for an emergency fund.
Yeah, in addition, I think the what they said I agree with, but you have to be careful with those home equity lines of credit because interest rates are very low right now, and you could be paying like 1% or something, and I don't think most people think that the 10-year bond is going to sit at 2% that long. Hopefully it's not, and that means that your line of credit could be 2% now and 7% in a couple of years.
Right, so don't use that credit infusion as a source of cash, in other words.
Right, emergency at last resort, I'd say.
Kelly, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, I'm just kind of laughing because I'm actually 30, and a lot of my friends, I'm listening to you guys talk about IRAs and bonds, and because of this whole thing with Wall Street and how things went down and the bank bailouts, like, most of us have taken our money out of the market completely, and we will never put it back into it because it changes overnight, and people are doing things with it that we have no control over. And people are asking us to put our trust in people with no morals. And so what my family has decided to do is my family owns a lot of property in Tennessee, and they have an apartment complex and all these things, and they've taken all their money out of the market and just bought more property. Because there's no point in investing in something. I mean, yeah, your real estate market might crash, but you still have something tangible. Where if something is junk on Wall Street, it's junk. You can't get your money back. It's gone. And it's flying the country with a tall blonde, you know? And
wow.
So it's like, I think what's happening is you're seeing a fundamental shift in the way people think about the stock market and investing long term. And my husband and I have actually come up with the point where we have no intention of retiring. The dream of going to Florida is just not going to happen. So what we've decided to do is we've built our own company, and we've actually tripled in 3 years. And we're diversifying our assets through different companies, and eventually we'll own an apartment complex. That way we have long-term money coming in that's also tangible. So it's real. I think people need to really wake up and realize that you can't put your money in these other people's hands because they tell you it's safe. You have to come up with your own plan because the economy has fundamentally changed and so has long-term investing.
Well, let's address Kelly's doomsday scenario on the financial markets, Wall Street. Dave, can you address that? There's so many things.
Yeah, there's so many components to
flying,
what you said.
Flying with a tall blonde is akin to investing in Wall Street stocks. And they're not really Wall Street stocks. They're financial market stocks.
Well, one thing I would like to say.
How do you separate that disconnect?
Well, if her name was Walton and she was one of Sam's kids or grandkids and she owned Walmart stock, she wouldn't be talking about the stock market is just way too risky. She'd be thinking, well, I'm pretty rich and I'm doing okay.
Right.
And that's all the stock market is, you know, a bunch of companies who are making money. You know, so I mean, I think real estate has a place, but we found out with real estate, you know, everything takes, you know, has some components of risk to it.
Alex, can you clear up this sort of mentality that because real estate is a quote unquote tangible asset, that it is always the best thing to fall back on? That's not necessarily entirely true.
Yeah, no, it goes through market cycles as well. And as we know, in the early, in the last decade, we had phenomenal real estate returns. Then they got very, very depressed. And so, you know, I hear what she says. We hear it. There is a fundamental anger or distrust in many cases against what's happened, especially over the last 11 years. But I would make the case that if a person was not fully invested and they were diversified with both debt, as in bonds, and stocks, that the last 11 years doesn't look nearly as bad. And our portfolios that are run that way for clients have made consistent money, as opposed to just saying all stocks are bad or all financial instruments are bad. But we hear her concern.
This speaks to sentiment again, Dan. The stock market has been volatile, yet still consistent. If you look at the numbers when it comes to returns, how do you approach your investment portfolio in the post-Kelly world?
Well, you definitely have to look at it from a long-term perspective. I mean, the financial markets here in the United States have been around for over 100 years, and I would say that they're probably going to be around for another 100 years, assuming we make it past 2012.
Right.
So, again, it goes back to that whole, you know, kind of making a reactionary call to something that's happened recently and not really thinking logically about this or reasonably about this and basing decisions off that. You know, Kelly may have her plan worked out for her and her family, and that's great, you know, if they want to diversify through real estate. But, you know, not everybody can do that. Not everybody can go out and have rental properties or go out and buy properties. And so they have to rely on something else. And that something else in most cases is investments through retirement plans, which are generally in the stock market.
And real estate alone isn't necessarily diversifying.
It definitely is not. But you know what's interesting about what Kelly said? You think about the older folks out there that were products of the Great Depression. They maintained that attitude throughout their lifetime, that the stock market is way too risky. You really can't trust banks. And, you know, they put all their money just in really, really safe instruments. And so this is kind of that reaction that our generation has had. This is the first, you know, climactic thing, you know, devastating financial period that we've gone through with 2008. And so a lot of people have kind of taken that attitude of the folks from the Great Depression.
Spencer in Kansas City, welcome to Central Standard.
Morning. Great show. I actually had the emergency fund and coming fresh out of school, went through it while I was looking through for employment. I've rectified that and have had a Roth IRA since I was 19. But I'm looking to say that it's been stagnant is playing it safe. So as I'm moving forward and looking to diversify, what are some maybe more aggressive or more short-term things that could render some gains, in your guys' opinion?
Well, he's burned through his emergency fund. Some of it, is that the case, Spencer?
That is correct, yes.
So he's looking to get liquid a little bit. Alex?
I thought he was talking about going forward.
Going forward, to build. Right.
Well, last year diversification didn't help. Okay, this didn't work. Active management didn't help. And really what worked was being very simple, having a S&P 500 and treasury bonds. But going forward, I think diversification will have its day again. And that means, you know, having different type of stocks, having different type of bonds. And that includes international bonds, I think, are attractive vis-a-vis U.S. treasury bonds that are at 31-year highs.
And I thought I was hearing him say that he wasn't happy with the returns on his
emergency funds. Right, he was actually looking to maybe even double up, it sounds like.
Yeah, and with your emergency funds, you don't want to get too aggressive because, you know, I can't tell you what's going to happen with the market 6 months from now or a year from now. But, you know, there are, you know, if you do some shopping around, maybe, you know, investigate CD rates or some online, there are different accounts that you can get a little bit better return on your money. But right now, returns are really low on safe money. It's just kind of how it is.
Yeah. I mean, Spencer, if you recently exhausted your emergency fund, the number one priority should be to rebuild it.
Right.
And then in terms of, you know, the Roth IRA, That is obviously a long-term investment, something you would include in your retirement nest egg. So the easiest way for investors to invest in the stock market through a diversified portfolio is through mutual funds. And so I would look into those.
For those who are fortunate enough to be preparing for retirement, how should they be preparing, Dan?
Well, first of all, it goes back to the step one of financial planning, which is to find out where you stand. And then at that point, do some analysis, maybe with the help of a financial planner, to determine where you're going to be at or near retirement. And do you have a sufficient amount of retirement capital to meet your long-term retirement goals? Do you have enough to basically cover what you're spending now, whether or not you can pick like a percentage of your current income? Do you want to replace 75 or 100% of your income and then in retirement? And then also you may have some other retirement goals like buying a second home or traveling more or whatever. But, it's basically finding out where you're at and what you need to do now in order to get you where you need to be so that you have a good probability of meeting your goals.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We have a brain trust of money mavens here to help you and here to make sense of the bill blues and shoring up retirement planning and investment portfolios and everything you need in your repertoire for a 2012 financial planning adventure this year. Alex Petrovic, he's of Petrovic Financial Services. Dan Matthews is a certified financial planner with Step and Rothwell. And David Jackson is with the Financial Planners Association of Greater Kansas City. That's our panel for today. Kansas City, what is your top financial priority in 2012, and how do you plan to get there? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Pat in Kansas City, Missouri writes into us, "I think my husband and I need to set up a living trust, but I'm afraid of the cost. What should we expect to pay to set one up? Is there an inexpensive way? This is the second marriage for each of us. They want to set up a living trust. How do they go about it?" She's concerned about costs of setting it up.
Living trust for second marriages, I mean, that's a great vehicle to use, especially if you have children from previous marriages that you need to think about the disposition or your estates. Living trusts are certainly a good tool to do that. In terms of the cost, you're probably looking anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000, depending on the level of complexity and the type of legal help that you get. I mean, that's just been my experience with helping clients set up these type of trusts.
And it is possible to go online and do those do-it-yourself kits, but you kind of get what you pay for it in a lot of cases. And when you start talking about legal work, it usually does make sense to have a professional do it for you.
Is asset allocation, Alex, determined only by a person's risk tolerance, or are there other factors?
I think that's one of the two most important. The second would be really what kind of returns do they need to meet their goals? And if you make the assumption that their main goal is retirement planning, then I think you need to do some retirement planning projections using, first off, what their risk tolerance would allow in terms of diversification of assets. And then secondly, to see if that will reach their goal. And many times we found, especially recently with clients concerned about the last 11 years in returns, is that they could take less risk than what they thought they could tolerate because their needs weren't as great as the income possibilities.
David Jackson, when you sit down with a client, whether they be new or whether they be existing, do you sort of map out a risk profile?
Absolutely, because one of the things we found, especially in the late 90s, was that everybody was an aggressive investor because no matter what you put your money in, you made money. And then in the 2000s, people took hits, actually lost money. Then you found out what they really felt, So it's really important for us to have a clear understanding, not only how do they feel about making money, how do you feel about losing money, both short-term and long-term, the younger you are, the more aggressive you can afford to be. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's what you should be because you may not be able to stomach the ups and downs.
And Dan, you also mentioned about the changing nature of pensions and the changing nature of retirement income that we could be anticipating here, how does that change the risk profile for a typical investor?
Well, for young investors, you know, I think that you have to take on some risk, and in order to get the type of returns that are going to help secure your retirement. And by, you know, what are the expected returns? Well, I think for our generation, if you're in a long-term portfolio and taking on at least some moderate amount of risk or are a little bit more aggressive, I think you should expect anywhere from 7 to 10% over the long term.
Dan, how can self-employed individuals establish or use retirement plans? Self-employed individuals.
Self-employed individuals, a little bit different animal because they are responsible for, in essence, setting up their own retirement plans. The easiest retirement plan for a self-employed individual is just to have an IRA. Even if you are employed in, under a an employer's plan, you can have an IRA. But the for those that are self-employed, setting up an IRA and making tax-deductible contributions to it is an easy way to lower your tax bill. And for in 2011, the maximum amount that you can put into a tax-deductible IRA was $5,000. Unless you're age 50 or older in 2011, and then if you were, then you could put in an additional $1,000 catch-up contribution. If you want to get more sophisticated in the in your business,
so you could buy $1,000 in ketchup.
You can buy, throw in some mustard, and there's your retirement plan.
Amy, welcome to Central Standard. We're talking about the catching up. Thanks, Dan. Amy, you're welcome to Central Standard.
Hello?
Hello. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. I just graduated from grad school, and I had gone right out of college. So I have my job, and I feel like I'm on the road, but I have a lot of debt, and I want to save up for a house, and I want to save up for a car, and I don't really know which should come first. So I wanted to get some advice on that and maybe how to get there.
Thank you, Amy, for your question. Wants to save up for a house, wants to save up for a car, essentially wants to save up for a life she's just getting started. What's first?
First, she's got to do the budget. And it's a dirty word, but you've got to see where you are, what you can afford to do. And she needs to actually tackle, you know, multiple things at the same time. She needs to be paying down the student loan. She almost has to. But she also has to start setting aside some money. And the best way for her to do it, if she does have some type of employer-sponsored plan, just set it up where it's automatically done for her. You know, just take a portion of your income, whether it's a percentage or a dollar, and just start forcing yourself to put money away so that eventually you do have that that down payment for the house and what have you. But you know, have to do multiple things.
MJ writes in at centralstandard@kcur.org, can you explain the various Roth IRA pros and cons? Dan, you look eager to tackle this.
Roth IRAs, they are a great way to save for retirement. They're not an investment in terms of people think, well, I have a, my Roth IRA is returning this amount and whatnot, but it's more of an investment vehicle. And so the Roth IRA allows you to make after-tax contributions up to the same limits that we talked about before with IRAs, but those the earnings on those contributions grow tax-deferred, and then when you withdraw the money from the account, it's tax-free. So it's a great way to provide different types of taxable assets in your nest egg when you retire, and you can use those tax-free withdrawals to your advantage when you do retire, because some of your other money will probably be in a tax-deferred account, which when you do draw it out will be taxable. So it's a great way to play and reduce your income tax liability in retirement, because the last thing you want to do is take your retirement nest egg and give it to Uncle Sam.
And one thing we do know is going to happen with taxes is they're going to change. We don't know how much they'll go up. There's a good chance they probably will go up. So having money in a Roth IRA that you can pull out tax-free could turn out to be a huge bonanza down the road.
And we're hearing a lot of talk about the payroll tax cut and how it affects family budgets. What are the implications of this, Alex?
Well, it's 2%. Are we talking about the one that got the 2-month extension?
Yes.
The ones that's in it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a 2%. So if a family of two made $100,000, that's $2,000 savings. And so it's a big thing to help people that basically live month to month. It's also a kind of a bad thing for the government because we're collecting less revenues for our Social Security future. So it's obviously kind of a political thing. I think it'll probably happen this year, but people are kind of used to it now. We'll have almost 14 months of it. So to give back 2% is going to be a sacrifice if that doesn't go through.
But as far as the economy, Dan, it's six on one hand, half a dozen on the other.
Well, I think it'll be a political disaster if they don't extend it, at least for the entire year. I mean, you have it ending at the end of February, and all these payroll companies are going to have to then, switch back to the 6.2% where it was 4.2% before. So it's just going to create a big mess. But, I think this is an opportunity for people to use that 2% to actually increase their retirement plan contributions, because this is money that's supposed to go into their Social Security pension. I mean, we don't have separate accounts. Taxpayers that pay into the system don't have separate accounts. It goes into a trust fund, and then it's basically allocated to those that are receiving the Social Security now. But think of it this way. If it's not going into Social Security, why shouldn't you put it in your retirement plan?
So, that's Dan, the extra money, not for jet skis.
Well, that's what they originally lowered the payroll tax cut to get people to spend more. So, yeah, the government would like to go out and buy,
True.
But at the same time, the government's not really securing your retirement income with the Social Security system, so you're going to have to take things in your own hands.
David Jackson, government-sponsored jet skis then?
I don't think so. But, Dan brings up such a good point. It's that there was a great article in the Kansas City Star that talked about the yo-yo society of you're on your own. And when it comes to retirement, you have to do it yourself, you can't plan on Social Security being, all your retirement income. You've got to do something on your own. And there's some great retirement plan calculators out there if you don't want to sit down with a financial planner, where you can actually run the number and see how much do you need to save and how much do you need when you retire and figure out what your magic number is.
Sam writes in to say, I have a home in the $200,000 range that I am not currently occupying. Should I rent it or try to sell it? I owe about 80% of the value on that home. It appears I could rent it for a few hundred more per month than the monthly loan payment, including taxes and insurance. What should Sam do? Alex?
Well, obviously, if it's for sale and it's not moving, I'd rent it. And there's a higher demand right now for rental property right now. We're seeing that as people have been, forced out of homes through foreclosures and that. So, yeah, for certain, if I could rent it, maybe then it's determined on what length of rent you want to, a 12-month or 24-month or whatever.
We're talking money management with Alex Petrovic, Dan Matthews, and David Jackson, all certified financial planners. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Call in and join the conversation. Adam in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I'm in my 30s, started a small business a couple years ago. We're doing pretty well. This year we may come into some money where I might be able to start putting it away. And I'm wondering, I have my data on mutual funds and doing a finance type package or portfolio. I'm wondering, is it better for me to, it's money I don't consider risk. And I'm wondering, is it better for me to just find a bank with a good interest rate and, seeing as, banks insure your money versus going into mutual funds, et cetera. I could take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Adam. A bank with a good interest rate, does that exist nowadays?
I don't know of one.
What should he do, Dan?
Well, if he wants to give his money a chance to keep up with inflation and beat inflation, you're obviously not going to get that at a bank right now because, obviously the interest rates on CDs and money market accounts are very, very low. So, again, long-term investor willing to take some risk. He's in his 30s. If he has some money to start saving for the long term, I think mutual funds are the best way to do that. And, mutual funds come in a lot of different varieties and packages, but you can find one that has a general asset allocation of some stocks and bonds, and you can make it very simple for yourself.
Angela in Blue Springs, welcome to Central Standard. We don't have Angela. Margot in KC. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, fascinating discussion. And I just want to give a big shout out to all the 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds that have been calling in and say, yes, because it does work. I'm on the other end, 52, and looking pretty good at retirement. My dad told me when I was in high school from then on, save, pay yourself the first 10%. in my life, I had to move it up to then 15% and eventually just started saving as much as I could, you know, for later on. Now my question is, what about annuities? I'm good in mutual funds and bonds and cash reserves and whatnot, but I've always been warned against annuities, but now I'm being told, hey, you should consider one. What are the dangers? What are the upsides and downsides?
What are the upsides and downsides, real quickly, on Margo's annuities? Alex.
Well, the upsides are that there's they do provide some guarantees that regular mutual funds or stocks don't. It's a variety of guarantees, and I'm not sure we have the time to do that. The downside is you're still investing with an insurance company, and the rates are relatively low right now as well.
How about annuities, Dave?
They have a lot of interesting features nowadays, so it may behoove her to take a look at them because there's some living benefits that annuities have added recently that can kind of create her own pension for herself. So, you know, like Alex said, we don't have time to go into all the nuances of annuities, but they may have a place in our overall portfolio.
Dan, are you bullish on annuities?
I am not. With annuities, two big things: fees and loss of flexibility. Make sure you understand what you're getting yourself into. Read the fine print on the contract. Understand that if you get into an annuity, there could be a surrender charge if you have to get out of it within a certain period of time, and that's probably the last thing you want.
I think the theme we've gathered here today is understanding where you are. It's been a great money talk here on Central Standard with Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial Services, Dan Matthews, a certified financial planner with Step and Rothwell, and David Jackson of the Financial Planners Association of Kansas City. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Great to be here.
And tune in tomorrow as we look at ways to handle police interrogations. Anything you listen to on this program can and will be used to help you. Plus, an area executive shares memories of his father's longtime hobby, painting lithographs. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next with the Techspurts. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.